RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back to Reality Check Radio. You're with Marie, and joining me now is David Seymour, leader of the ACT Party. Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you.
Busy week for you, even on your standards. The bill, how are things progressing?
Oh, really well, because it's actually bringing a lot of people to the table to say what they really think. For example, I saw a school principal write a letter to his community just today saying that he believes that the Treaty of Waitangi is a document that allows people to live in New Zealand and make their move here and make their homes here. That's a pretty extraordinary belief that anyone who moves here or lives here is here purely because of the treaty, not because they have their own rights. But I think it's helpful. It's not helpful that we have a country where school principals believe these kinds of things, but it's helpful that they're actually saying it so that people can decide what they think.
And I think he also went on and said any absence of parents with children wanting to attend the protest would be considered justified. How is that justified?
Well, it's a very good question. I think that's what's really important here is that the Treaty Principles Bill is not going to harm or disadvantage a single child missing out on an education because your principal isn't actually focused on equipping you with the skills to navigate the modern world. Now, that's a problem. But again, I say it's going fabulously because a whole lot of people are saying what they really think, and I think it's useful for us to be able to make up our minds on that.
Mm. So there have been some amendments made or some revisions made to the three principles that you first laid out. The first three I thought were beautifully clear and concise. The second three are a little expanded. What are the differences and why the changes?
I think the biggest difference is that there is now a reference to the rights of hapū and iwi Māori that they had in 1840. And the reason for that is that you get the criticism, well, this was an agreement signed between a whole lot of chiefs and the crown. Surely there should be a mention of the chiefs. Now, I would argue the original version actually did say that because it said everyone has these rights, and that includes descendants of those Māori chiefs. However, there are people who would like to think that mentioning hapū and iwi is going to be a gesture that shows that we're including them, and if that calms some people and allows them to take a second look at the treaty, I think it's worthwhile. It goes on to say that those rights are only upheld if they are the same rights that everyone has a reasonable expectation of. So we're still saying that everyone has the same rights. We're just acknowledging that it started with the rights of hapū and iwi in 1840.
Your colleague and compatriot, Christopher Luxon, has over-egged the pudding, I believe, a little bit this week in terms of his disagreement with the bill and the support. Then Select Committee, what sort of goals, what are you hoping to achieve with the Select Committee process, knowing that you don't have National Party support at the end of it?
Well, I hope what we'll see is a democratisation of the treaty. So for the first time, a whole lot of people who are told you're not the right person, you're not an expert, you're racist, you're this, you're that, you can't have a say. The treaty, our constitutional framework, is really just to be sorted out between a few academics, a few judges, and some Maori leaders. We're now saying everyone gets a say. Anyone who's a New Zealander will be able to submit to the Select Committee. And I hope that what we'll see is an arrangement where actually we can be really clear that we have a document that is owned by all, a constitutional setting that is owned by all, and that everyone has an equal say about our constitutional future. Now, even if the bill only goes that far, that is a massive achievement. And the proof it's a massive achievement is you've got to ask yourself, why are people who say the bill's going nowhere so determined to stop it from going anywhere? Because they know that even going that far will transform the treaty debate.
So then looking forward on that, I'm assuming you've done polling in terms to get the mood of the nation, what New Zealanders actually want. What are they saying in those polls and that feedback that you're getting that you've done in your research?
Well, you don't need my research. I can just tell you what's out there publicly. A poll of 1,000 people by Curia, so a standard poll, the same as any TV poll. Curia Research, a reliable pollster used by the National Party and ACT and a lot of corporate clients. those pollsters say that 46% of people support it, 25% of people oppose it, and 29% aren't sure. Now, I just put that in perspective. This is a group of people who are overwhelmingly in favour of the bill by almost a ratio of 2-1. I think that shows that this has got seriously strong support and deserves to be heard.
You and the Free Press made Jenny May Clarkson your MVP for your interview last week. Look, I have to say congratulations for calling her out. For someone who's been turning off mainstream media for quite some time, it was a refreshing thing to see. Do you think that this is a hangover from the Public Interest Journalism Fund, which had that stipulation that you had to be pro-Titiriti in all measures when it came to reporting on the treaty, that this is the sort of attitude that you got, or is this actually something that's more personal?
Yes and no. The Public Interest Journalism Fund, I think, gets too much attention. It's $55 million spread over several years. It's not a huge amount of money when the media industry is $1 billion every year. You got to put it in a bit of perspective. The other thing I'd say is that these problems are much more pervasive. You've now got a whole lot of people, including that school principal I mentioned, a lot of the people that work at TVNZ, people in the universities, people in the courts, who actually believe that the treaty is a document that gives permission for non-Māori to live in New Zealand, and therefore you sort of live here on the basis that Māori have given you permission, and you're kind of that tangata whenua, and you're kind of something else. That belief is so pervasive and it's so destructive. It stops us solving basic practical problems like how do we get more houses and roads built? How do we make education work? How do we make the public service efficient? But of course, you can't do those things because you've got to have two separate health authorities. You've got to have two chief executives at the Human Rights Commission. You've got to have a separate Mataranga Māori approach to science. You do all these things, co-governance of three waters, required to consult iwi authorities on resource management, all of these things. Have the effect that you can't get stuff done in this country. You can't overcome your other problems. And that's why we've got to deal with, it's not just the Public Interest Journalism Fund, it's a pervasive belief that we're tackling here.
So then if you're looking to tackle that, academia and the legal profession are two that have been very forceful in promoting Titiriti and the principles of Titiriti. How do you roll that back?
Well, the Treaty Principles Bill is the main way because, first of all, it legitimates the discussion. And I believe even if it doesn't pass this time, I believe it will pass in the future, or something like it will pass sooner or later. Because then when people say, oh, well, we've got to do this because of the treaty, you can say, great, means we're all equal. Let's move on. Rather than this interpretation that's grown up in recent years. I also think it's really important that we get to a stage where we can say to people, look, you by dint of being born in this country have a set of rights, but no more. And it's equal to everyone else, because once you think about it that way, suddenly it's not about what happened 200 years ago, it's about what I can do tomorrow. And that's a much more positive way to look at the world.
Now, apparently your lack of fluency in te reo excludes you from having a discussion with protest or hikoi organisers. Well, according to them, delivered in English, I see. When they get to Wellington, would you still consider talking to them, or have they shot their bolt on that?
No, I'll talk to anyone. I mean, I'm open to it. I spoke to the organisers of the big protest at the outside the COVID lockdowns as well. So, I'm happy to, but it does show what you're dealing with. And I think the main thing that people may be missing is that this guy, Eru Kapakingi, is the son of the MP Kapakingi. He's on the parliamentary payroll. It's not clear if he's on leave or if he's doing this on a taxpayer funded. But in many ways, it's not really a Māori protest. It's a Māori party protest. And I think a lot of people have missed that distinction.
Well, particularly too, I think Rāwiri's wife, Kiri Tamahiri, who is also the daughter of John Tamahiri, is also very much involved in organising this. So therefore, is this a political stunt or a genuine hikoi of grievance of those participants?
Well, it's certainly been, I mean, there are people who are genuinely aggrieved based on the information they have. Because they think that I'm trying to take away the Māori language and culture. They say we're trying to take back to the 1950s, all of this. It just doesn't stand up to any scrutiny, but that's what they're saying.
And you hope to dispel that during the Select Committee, I assume, because I guess they have the every opportunity to present to Select Committee and actually put their grievances to an official forum.
Well, that's exactly right. But bear in mind that they're going to be making those kinds of submissions to the Select Committee as a citizen of New Zealand like anyone else. And I think that is part of the issue. You've got this belief system that if you have the right ancestors, then you are born special in this country. My view is rather than focusing on ancestry, we should focus on people's universal humanity.
Mm. Speaking of universal humanity, looking towards the United States now, were you expecting such an overwhelming result for the Republican Party and Donald Trump?
Yeah, well, I read the Free Press, the ACT Party newsletter you mentioned, mm-hmm. and the Free Press predicted it last week. And it seemed to me, having travelled to the US, at the start of the year, I just asked a lot of people, they're all voting Trump, and I said, what about these court cases? They said, that's just a jack-up, it's the system gone after him. And I realised these people were deeply motivated to vote for him, they don't really care about anything else. So it was foreseeable, and you could see it in the final weeks of the campaign. I've been in 4, 5, 6 election campaigns. He was a candidate having fun in the final weeks, and that's always a good sign.
He's got a really different team around him, not from the political sphere, most of them. A lot of out-of-the-box thinking. Have you got your notebook out? Got your pen out, just in case you see something you might like?
Well, let's see what happens. If you look at the way I've done the Healthy School Lunch Program, I mean, we've halved the cost of that by getting in a team of business people to say, how do you do it better? So who knows, maybe he's been copying me. But certainly one thing I do believe is we need to work more closely with business and charities and civil society. New Zealand's not big enough for the government to have the kind of attitude it did during COVID, which was really arm's length from everyone else. We know best, doesn't work.
Yes, indeed. One final question. Across to Australia, they are looking at banning under 16s to social media. Tall order, I believe. Is there any appetite for that in this country?
I would start as a skeptic. I don't like the state censoring things or trying to control people. The only reason I'd maybe give it a second look is, okay, there's a really big problem, I believe, with the effect of phones and social media on young people's mental health. And every time I visit a school, which is pretty much every week at the moment, the teachers, the principals tell me the same thing. The kids aren't all right, and they've got dramatically worse in the last 10 years. So I think there's something in that. But we need to see how this problem's going to be solved. But just reaching for a state ban, that's certainly not my first instinct. So acknowledge the issue, not so keen on a ban. But I'm talking to people in education nearly every week about how they think you can solve this problem.
Go well and enjoy the rest of the time. The bill, has it been introduced? When is it looking at Select Committee? Next year, middle of next year?
No, so it was introduced last Thursday. That means it's just put on the table in Parliament. It will be debated tomorrow at about 3 o'clock, and then it will be considered by a select committee straight after that. So usually the select committee will open for public submissions within a few days or maybe a few weeks of the bill being referred from the Parliament.
Excellent. Thank you very much. This is David Seymour, leader of the ACT Party here on Reality Check Radio. We appreciate your time
this morning.
Thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.